Hey, it's Ryan Seacrest. Life comes at you fast, which is why it's important to find some time to relax. A little you time. Enter Chumba Casino. With no download required, you can jump on anytime, anywhere for the chance to redeem some serious prizes. So treat yourself with Chumba Casino and play over 100 online casino-style games, all for free. Go to ChumbaCasino.com to collect your free welcome bonus. Sponsored by Chumba Casino.
No purchase necessary. VGW Group. Void where prohibited by law. 21 plus. Terms and conditions apply.
I travel the entire country. Yeah, come with me sometime, and you'll hear what the American people are saying. They understand that impeachment is a very divisive measure. But if we have to go there, we'll have to go there. But we can't go there unless we have the facts, and we will follow the facts, and we will follow the obstruction that the president is making of us are getting the fact and make our decision when we're ready. That's the only question. That's all I'm going to say about this subject.
Hey, hey, folks. Welcome, welcome. This is the Michael Steele Podcast. So glad you could be with us. And that was the Speaker of the House laying it down as plainly, as clearly as she could. We will follow the facts. We will follow the obstruction on impeachment. And as far as she's concerned, she ain't there yet. But hey, we'll see. There's a lot of pressure brewing inside the Democratic caucus, certainly among grassroots activists out there. We know what's going on in their passions are driving them. And we're going to get into all of that today. And I'm so glad to have a good buddy of mine. I've admired him and have had the privilege of working with him. And he's just one of the good ones, folks. He was a great mayor of the great city of Philadelphia. He was a very, very good governor for the great state of Pennsylvania. And he is now with us to talk about this and a whole lot more. He is Ed Rendell, the 45th governor of Pennsylvania. He's the former mayor of Philadelphia and served as chairman. And this is the other thing we've got in common. He was the DNC chairman during the 2000 presidential election. He is now a co-chair of the Immigration Task Force at the Bipartisan Policy Center, where I get the privilege of working and serving with him. I'm on the board, and he is a fantabulous contributor to our efforts. Governor, welcome to the Michael Steele Podcast.
My pleasure, Michael. My pleasure.
Well, you know, Governor, I wanted to open up with Nancy sort of laying down definitively the line that she has been drawing for some time now. And I want to get your reactions to it, because I think it's important to contextualize, as you know, as someone who has led the party, who has served in the party in elected capacities, passion sometimes can get ahead of the politics.
Correct.
I think impeachment is one of those moments where passions get ahead of the politics. What's your reaction to Nancy Pelosi's sort of, hey, folks, we're going to follow the facts, and we're not there yet, essentially?
I think Nancy's dead on, absolutely dead on. And you know, I love people who are passionate about politics, because more Americans should be. But sometimes they have to balance their passion with reality. Look, I believe there's enough in the Mueller report that's uncontradicted that you could bring an impeachment process against President Trump. But I'm not sure that it would pass the House, but let's assume for a minute that it passes the House. So the House impeaches, but that doesn't remove the president. That just bumps it over to the Senate, where he's tried. Now, there is about as much chance, Michael, of the Senate convicting Donald Trump as there is that I will wake up tomorrow and be able to comb my hair in a pompadour. There is absolutely no chance. So why are we wasting all of our time and our energy on a futile act?
So what's the whole thing about then? Why the push?
Well, you ask the Democrats and they say, well, the Constitution requires us to do this. No, it doesn't. The Constitution doesn't require you to do anything. It gives you the option of doing it, but it doesn't require you to do it.
Right.
Well, we wouldn't be following our duty if we didn't do this. No. And if you are a strong believer that Donald Trump should be removed as president, as I am, you want to do the thing that will most likely remove him. If we go down this process and have impeachment hearings for 3-4 months, public is going to be sick of it. Now, will our base love it? Sure. But our base is voting for us no matter what we do.
Right.
No matter which of the 10 candidates is our standard bearer. Maybe, yeah, even Mr. Yang. They'd probably vote for him.
Right.
The question is, will ordinary citizens do it? And I think it will do nothing but turn people off. We're not going to be able to convict him. So let's beat him at the polls.
So
and I don't understand why our guys aren't bright enough to figure that out.
And that's the part, and you know, that's the part, Governor, that I find frustrating in this whole thing. You know, maybe I shouldn't be frustrated because, look, that you guys are the other team, and, you know, we know how these things play out. I have a problem with the head of my team. And so you kind of look at the other team and go, okay, you guys got to play for this? And yet what I see folks doing on the Democratic side is just sort of standing in the huddle. Get out in the game, baby. Play the game. And the game,
absolutely,
the game that has to be played, as I think the speaker, and I'm on record officially is saying this. Look, I've gone head to head with Nancy Pelosi. I lost the battle over health care. She got it passed. And, you know, yeah, she paid a price for it. I made her pay a price for it in 2010. I have enormous respect for her political acumen. And her acumen, as you rightly noted, is spot on. And I don't understand why folks just don't understand that what she's trying to do is get them out of the huddle and get in the game in a way that lays out how Democrats are going to transition this country away from Trump. Because this isn't, I don't know, maybe I'm wrong, Governor. I don't see this so much as a fight for the future of America and fight for the future of the Democratic Party. That's a fight we can have in 2024. I think right now the country is looking for a way or in leadership that's going to transition us away from what they are beginning more and more to reject. And that is the aberrant, narcissistic, self-indulgent behavior of a president who is deconstructed and in many cases made inoperable government functions that have hampered our positions here at home and globally.
Yeah, I couldn't agree more. And again, you got to keep your eye on the objective. And the objective is to do just that, and an impeachment process that can no way successfully lead to the removal of President Trump is only going to help energize his base and only going to make it more difficult to do the final objective.
So how would this play out? Let's say in a fit of like, okay, enough already, Nancy Pelosi says impeachment hearings. You've got the process that's kind of been put in place, and Jerry Nadler speaks a little bit to that. Let's listen to what the congressman has to say.
The resolution before us represents the necessary next step in our investigation of corruption, obstruction, and abuse of power. Some call this process an impeachment inquiry. Some call it an impeachment investigation. There's no legal difference between these terms, and I no longer care to argue about the nomenclature.
All right. And so he's out there saying, no matter what you call it, this is what we're doing. And Nancy comes along and goes, all right, fine, let's do that. How does this play out in the 2020 elections, particularly in the Democratic primaries right at this point?
Well, I think most of the candidates, they're all saying that they're in favor of an impeachment inquiry. But down deep, they're sort of hoping that it doesn't happen because they know that it will have the tendency to not accomplish anything and just inflame the Republican base.
Right.
So that's what I would be for if I was a presidential candidate. I'd be for Nancy's position. Let's not do anything until there's something, and if there's something that's completely shocking.
Is the landscape so toxic right now that on this subject that it could have the kind of residual effect where Democrats, as we saw in 2016, and you know very well the impact that it had on the 16 race when the tension between among the base between the Hillary Clinton group and the Bernie Sanders group said, you know, no mas, I'm not playing. Could this issue be that for those so passionate? You did reference before that, hey, you know, our guys will vote for whoever the standard bearer is. That may be true. But will they be so turned off by the fact that you didn't act on their core conviction, which was we need to impeach this president, damn it, and you didn't. And I don't really want to engage in this process because you didn't do what I asked you to do.
The only one I can think of who would stay home because of that would be Tom Steyer. He would be the only guy who would stay home. Now, people know what the ultimate objective is, and even if they disagree with not proceeding on impeachment, I think they absolutely 100% would be coming out. I've never seen this level of determination among voters as it exists today.
So let's shift a little bit to what's happening right around us. We are up for round three of the Democratic debate. You've got the stage now narrowed considerably from 20 plus to 10. The evil eye is on not one, but two potential targets in Elizabeth Warren and Joe Biden.
The senator said before, it's going to cost you in your paycheck. There will be a deductible in your paycheck. You're going to, the middle class person, someone making 60 grand with three kids, they're going to end up paying $5,000 more. They're going to end up paying 4% more on their income tax. That's a reality. Now, it's not a bad idea if you like it. I don't like it.
We just need to be clear about what Medicare for All is all about. Instead of paying premiums into insurance companies and then having insurance companies build their profits by saying no to coverage, we're going to do this by saying everyone is covered by Medicare for All. Every health care provider is covered. And the only question here in terms of difference is where to send the bill.
Elizabeth Warren, very effective, I think, at rebutting the president's nomenclature of her, the Pocahontas, you know, the tag he's put on her.
Well, I kind of agree with your analysis. They don't want to see people attacking people the way that Senator Booker and Senator Harris did to the vice president in the first debate.
Well, and then, but going after Barack Obama, I mean, there was
incredible.
I have to admit, I thought I had suddenly had flipped into a time warp and had landed on a Republican stage. the way they started to go. And Joe Biden, you could tell, he was sitting there going, wait a minute, am I in the right room? Because
right. Am I just imagining this? And I'll tell you, if they keep it up, and I don't think they will, I think they've learned their lesson, but were they to keep it up, they may just force President Obama to make a choice.
Right.
And if he makes a choice, you can see that big red sign flash, game over.
Yes.
Game over.
Yes, indeed. That would do it. And they should thank their lucky stars that he has not come out in support of his former vice president in the first instance, that he's doing the honorable thing and I think the appropriate political thing, and that is staying above it. And letting the field narrow itself accordingly. But you're right, Governor. They keep throwing punches at him and his administration, and he starts deciding, you know what, I just don't think candidate so-and-so has really got the chops to be president.
Right.
That's...
Then flash that big red sign, gain him over.
So what do you think, from your experience, what in estimation, particularly from have you put your former chairman's hat on, what are some of the dangers for a candidate? So let's say you are an Andrew Yang. You are and even a Cory Booker who's sitting at 4% or whatever, Klobuchar, punching up, deciding, you know, I'm going to go after, as we saw Kamala do, go after one of these top contenders, A, to sort of draw the fire on them, raise my own profile relative to them, and if the stars align the way they did for Kamala, you know, the next morning I'm going to be leading the news. That could cut both ways, as you know. But so what's your estimation of this whole idea for some of these guys who are sitting in the single digits, lower single digits, especially punching up to try to draw some attention?
Well, there's a problem with that. I thought Senator Booker did a fairly effective job of punching up in the first debate. But he punched up, and where did it get him? He went from 2 percentage points to 3 percentage points.
Right.
Kamala Harris got a temporary plus. She rocketed up in the polls by 10 points the next day. But before the second debate, she was back down to where she was at 7 or 8 points. So query how much that gets you. So it puts the people who are below 5-6% in a quandary. What do they do? How do they get noticed? Well, I think Mr. Yang intends to do something, you know, that's unprecedented, and maybe he's got something that will draw him notice,
right,
good or bad. But I think a bold idea, if it catches on, is a better way to do it than attack. I mean, Democrats do not want Democrats attacking each other. And I think Cory Booker and Kamala Harris learned that.
And Kamala seems to have paid probably the steepest price for that, because after that, and I warned on this and got some flack on Twitter and on the network a little bit about saying the black vote especially did not appreciate that, would not appreciate what she did. And it turned out to be true. Yeah, younger African-Americans were like, yeah, that's cool, we like that. But the folks who actually go out and vote did not. And her campaign flatlined after the high of, you know, the first couple of days afterwards, and then began steadily to drop. And she's now, off of polling done 2 weeks ago or 3 weeks ago, down another 5. So your advice there is smart, because you go out and make your own case, stake your own game. If everybody did that, you probably would probably be better off, I think, in the long run.
And I think the candidates misread it a little bit. They wanted to show that they were tough enough to take on Donald Trump in the debate.
Right.
Well,
right.
Let me tell you, Hillary Clinton mopped the floor 3 times with Donald Trump, yeah, and the polls showed that. And what good did that do her?
Right, exactly.
What good did that do her? So I think if you're showing strength, you should show strength in your substantive arguments.
How do you assess then, let's do the long game here. We're into next year. The nominee has been identified. And so we know that when you get to that point, the whole strategy changes. It's no longer a primary. So the wiles and whims of the hard base are not dispositive. They don't dictate the terms of engagement any longer, because now the conversation is with everybody else. You know, it's not just the folks who got to vote in the primary. How do the Democrats make this transition, or how should they make the transition, number one, into a general conversation with the people of this country? And two, do you see the battle lines actually being drawn not between the East Coast, not on the East Coast or the West Coast, where you've got the large population centers that generally benefit Democrats? But the line is actually in between, in Michigan and Wisconsin, Nevada, you know, the Carolinas, et cetera. And how do you then navigate that conversation, as we saw in just this week in the special elections in North Carolina? Republicans are applauding, we won our seats, but you peel back that onion and you see, wait a minute, but you lost the suburbs. And you're losing the suburbs where the populations are changing and growing all at the same time.
Right. It's very hard. But the one thing that I caution us as Democrats to do is, during this primary fight, if you stake out positions that aren't going to be acceptable to the general electorate, it's going to be difficult to come back. If I were Donald Trump and someone I have no pleasure to become, but if I were Donald Trump and his campaign, if either Senator Harris, Senator Warren, or Senator Sanders became our nominee, I would put a lot of money, and he has a lot of money, on TV day after day after day, saying, here's what Senator Sanders or Senator Warren or Senator Harris said about health insurance, and have them raising their hand to the question of who would get rid of private insurance.
Right.
And say, so Mr. and Mrs. America, They're going to take you out of a private insurance program that you like, and they're going to put you in a government-run program. And by the way, all of the independent advocacy groups will have for 6 months been doing commercials about the horrors of independent advocacy.
Right.
And of government-run health care. They're going to be running those commercials. So the American people are going to be scared stiff about going into a government program. And the basic fact is Donald Trump can't win this election. We can lose it. He can't win it. There's nothing he can say positively that will get voters to vote for him. He needs voters to vote against us. And if we pin ourselves in, and people say to me, well, you're for Vice President Biden, and he's not going to have that problem with being too far to the left. And I say, it doesn't matter. Donald Trump's going to save the Democratic Party, the Gang of Four. Now, I think it's going to be very important what's in the Democratic platform. Because even if Joe Biden's the candidate, if the Democratic platform calls for an end to private insurance, Donald Trump will put that right on TV.
And you know he will. And he will wear it like a badge around the Democrats' necks.
Right. As he's very successful in doing.
So let's broaden the scope out a little bit. I wanted to get your reaction to the news that's still developing out of Washington, where it's involving Andrew McCabe, and we all know him from his days as deputy director of the FBI. Lost his appeal against the criminal charges against him that had been rejected, according to a person that we're familiar with the story that is developing. That his appeal to avoid criminal charges, folks are like, nope, you're on the hook, fella. And this is actually a very significant move, I think. His effort to appeal against possible criminal charges being rejected and now opens up the door for an indictment of McCabe, who, according to the Justice Department Inspector General's report, made those false statements to federal investigators about his disclosure of information to a journalist in 2016. A lot of what Republicans were screaming about seems to have some bite to it. What's your take on these developments?
You know, I think that's a little bit inside baseball, Michael, in a sense that it's so confusing. It's confusing for me as a lawyer and as a former prosecutor that it's hard for the individual to understand. Mm-hmm. Will it reinforce the Trump base that there's some conspiracy against Donald Trump? Of course. But they don't have to be reinforced. They'll believe that no matter what happens.
Right, right.
No matter what happens. So I think that's more sort of inside baseball, that the media and the people that make their living on a day-to-day basis in politics, that we think is big news. But I think for the average American, they'll just sort of glaze over on that.
Well, and I think you're right in the main, because at the IG report itself concluded that he, quote, lacked candor. When questioned about those incidents related to what he had given journalists. And at that point, you know, people are like, oh, well, he didn't tell everybody everything. Okay, moving on. So it's just, it's just, yeah, I think you're right. But it's, again, part of the noise-making machine for the Trump team to come out and sort of create the necessary diversions, going back to what we were just saying. You know, something else he can either hang around the Democrats' neck, or he could go out there and bang the drum about louder than other things, and the public,
right.
The public kind of checks out.
It's grist for the mill for Donald, and he'll use it to the extent that he can use it. But again, it's a pretty complicated thing to make people understand.
Indeed. Folks, he is or was the 45th governor of Pennsylvania, and he's a good friend, and I'm so glad to have him come and share some insights as we see the Democrats changing up for the next phase of their game to the nomination. and to get his insights on how the Democrats need to pre-position themselves for the battle ahead is very, very important. And Ed, it's such a pleasure having you on the podcast, my friend.
Thanks, Michael. Let's do it again.
Absolutely. So, folks, don't forget to check out Ed's insights. You can get them on Apple Podcasts, Stitcher, TuneIn, or wherever you get your podcasts. That's where you're going to find me and Ed talking about what the Democrats need to do. Follow me on Twitter at Michael Steele. And don't worry, I'll be back next time for more great conversation. Check y'all out later. Take care.
It is Ryan Seacrest here. There was a recent social media trend which consisted of flying on a plane with no music, no movies, no entertainment. But a better trend would be going to ChumbaCasino.com. It's like having a mini social casino in your pocket. Chumba Casino has over 100 online casino-style games, all absolutely free. It's the most fun you can have online and on a plane. So grab your free welcome bonus now at ChumbaCasino.com. Sponsored by Chumba Casino.
No purchase necessary. VGW Group. Void where prohibited by law. 21 plus. Terms and conditions apply.